It is time for a conversation with John Orr. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just want to let you know there's something remarkable that may happen here. It happened earlier this week. Chance of snow and rain until 1 p.m., and then rain. Chance of snow tonight. Snow tomorrow. Snow Saturday night. I don't know if we're going to be pulling out the toboggans and sleds, but doggone it, I'll be ready. Anyway, the show, A Conversation with John Orr, begins now. Yeah. So our guest today is Chuck Wilner. Chuck, why don't you just say hi to the folks in Radioland?
Well, thank you for having me on.
Okay, just almost made that on time. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on. We thank you for coming by. And the topic today, as I understand it, is North Coast forests and climate change. And this is obviously relevant since our planet seems to be going to hell in a handbasket with acceleration featured in terms of disasters and catastrophes affecting people everywhere, drought, floods, water insufficiency, coastal inundation, wildfires. Did I miss anything? Tsunamis. Yeah.
The list is quite long.
Oh, but that's false science, isn't it, Chuck?
I don't think so.
Okay. Whatever it is, I guess we owe it to future generations and perhaps ourselves and certainly to the large insurance companies to do whatever we can to mitigate that. So, Chuck, why don't you just tell us about yourself, your background, your employment, if you wish, and what your presentations will be and when they are and what they can expect if the people show up.
Sure, thanks. Well, tonight I'm speaking on forests. I've been working on forests for 25 years with the Coast Range Association, so I focus on coastal forests and watersheds, related issues, and there's an arc to the work over those 25 years. About a year ago, I started looking closely at climate change, more related to work we're doing with ocean, on our ocean program. And we have a staff person who's based on the coast that does that. And the more I researched and got up to speed, I became quite alarmed. And that rolled back over to my work on forests, and it changed and shifted the perspective of everything we're doing on it, which at the time...
What were you alarmed about?
I was alarmed at what I was seeing.
And what were you seeing?
I was looking at the current research on climate change, and which I call the climate crisis now, because all the models... It seems like every month new stories come out where they're turning up the speed by which they think the crisis is going to arrive, the degree of impact from climate change. And so I became quite alarmed and looked into forest. And so I've changed everything around in how we're working on the forest issue, which goes back 20 years. And that's what I'll be speaking about tonight in Cannon Beach.
That's at Tolavana Hall at 7 p.m. That's
yes.
in the south
yes.
part of town right there.
And then I'll be at the community college here in Astoria on Thursday, the 23rd.
Tolavana Hall is on South
Hemlock.
Hemlock, I
yeah.
believe.
Yeah, and that's at 7.
That's at 7.
So these will be the first set of presentations that go beyond previous work, just looking at ownership and management and the impact of our current way we manage forests, to actually talk about the climate crisis, what's known now about that, kind of bringing people up to speed, and then rolling over to what I think Oregon's contribution to the climate crisis could be, which is changing the management on our forest lands.
And so we'll get to that in a moment. I do want to remind our callers that this is a call-in talk show, 503-325-0010. Again, that's 325-0010. My guest is Chuck Wilner, and we're going to be speaking today, and you can direct your comments or your questions to us here on the topic of North Coast forests and climate change. So I mentioned this in our prep conversation that I recall from Al Gore's movie, it was also a book, that the tipping point estimated to in 2005 or six was thought to be 2009, and maybe that was alarmist. But based on the data you've heard, and I have heard anecdotally, the tipping point concept may be subject to revision based on new data. Can you comment on that?
Well, recently a scientific body said we've got 11 years to get it right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was 12 when they said that. Now it's 11. And, you know, the 350.org group was started by Bill McKibben to try and keep carbon in the atmosphere below 350.
350 what? Okay, let's remember.
350 parts per million.
Okay, that was the goal.
It was the goal. We are now at 410.
This is carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide. We are now at 410, and the graph is straight up. So we've got to do something, and we've got to do something big.
Well, how do we overcome that? It seems that a recent poll said that Americans were more attuned and agreeable and less skeptical about human-caused climate change, carbon dioxide-caused, 20 years ago than they are now. So it seems like in terms of the Americans and public consciousness and now with our election and the retreat by the Trump administration on the Paris Accords to limit those, that we're going in the wrong direction. What do you think?
Well, Trump's going in the wrong direction, but I don't think we should get distracted by any direction he's going in his administration. What we really need to focus on is, I think the American public now is aware that we've got a big problem. I don't think they're aware of the severity of the problem and how soon some catastrophic impacts are going to show up. But I think we've moved past the denial nonsense, mm-hmm. and now we're looking forward. So that's where we need to go.
Yeah, we do need to look forward. And putting aside the catastrophes that continually drain FEMA's budget and are causing insurance rates to go up, we still have a significant number of congressmen, senators now that are just they're either in denial or they're on essentially the payroll of the petroleum industry who seem to resist this. So that's a discouraging fact. That's a reality as I see it. I speak for myself, but it is a good reason to vote if you don't want to enter the halls of heaven facing a significant delay, because you're accountable for destroying the planet. I know that sounds really dramatic, but I have long thought since I was a freshman in college that there was an urgency to things, and good Lord, that was 45 years ago. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're talking on this topic. You'll be here in Astoria on the subject of the Green Deal, also up here on February the 23rd. We'll give a time and a location for that shortly. But I do want to remind my callers, the number here is 503-325-0010. The topic today is North Coast forest and climate change. So why don't we talk about the next aspect of our brief outline here, and that is timber industry problems, ownership, and real estate investment trusts, if you will.
Well, the short of it is, and you had the speakers last month at the community college program where they were talking how the timber industry in its current management regime is the number one carbon polluter in Oregon, which is not acknowledged by the state. John Talbert, Daphne Wisham made that case. I've seen studies out of OSU School of Forestry doing some quantitative analysis that suggests that. And they point towards advancing the size of the forest by cutting less frequently.
Okay, let me just stop you there. So have you reviewed the science and the evidence-based science for the proposition that you just stated, the timber industry is the number one climate change contributor in Oregon? Because a lot of the listeners out there will hear that and say, what? Because they think that, the timber industry grows trees, and trees absorb carbon dioxide. How can that possibly be?
Well, I would recommend going to the Center for Sustainable Economy. Just Google that, Center for Sustainable Economy. And on their website, and they're based out of Portland, they have a great explanation of how that occurs. It's not my expertise, but my expertise is what is the state of the forest out there. And let's talk about Clatsop County. We had massive original forest under this wet, very fertile conditions, and the state of the forest out there now, if they're growing trees to 40 and cutting, the average tree age now is 20 years of age. That's a little tiny tree. So that forest out there is extremely small. All the missing forest that once was there is now carbon in the atmosphere.
Well, where do the North Coast forests figure in efforts to combat the devastating effects of climate change? How do they figure? Is there something that is unique about our trees, our forests, our ecosystems?
Yeah, we're carbon-dense forests. Our forests can hold more carbon per acre, if you let them grow, than almost any other forest in the world.
Are we talking about old growth, though?
I'm talking about large, older forests. If you have old growth, you have massive amounts of carbon.
But we only have about 11, with the statistics I recall, is there about 11% of the forests in the state of Oregon are old growth. Have you heard that stat?
Correct. But here's what's more important, and what professors like Bev Law at OSU School of Forestry pointed out, is that we have millions of acres of these tiny forests that should start growing larger, and they would absorb huge amounts of CO2 out of the atmosphere, be our contribution to mitigating climate change, but you have to let the forest grow bigger. You have to keep a working forest, but let the frequency of clear-cutting and your management advance rotation so you're growing big trees.
So this is this one of those proposals where the environmentalists have their way, and as a result, there are fewer jobs, and the economic base of timber counties like Tillamook and Clatsop are adversely affected for some abstract ideal?
That's a good question, and that's what really the Green New Deal that Ocasio-Cortez introduced yesterday is talking about, is how can we do things to address the climate crisis in our local areas that, and if you listen to what she has to say, economic justice is the third point of her program. We could grow forests larger, we could have more jobs, and we could have a much better local economy if we would pay attention to how that kind of a program might work out under a Green New Deal.
Well, who's going to pay for it? Is it going to be higher taxes to pay for this? And what will happen to the displaced workers, if any?
There won't be displaced workers. We have displaced workers now. The current owners are based only on one concept: minimize costs. Forest workers right now are being replaced by automated harvesting machines. The mills have automated. There are really no workers anymore, hardly. You have professional management. That's capturing most of the income in the forest industry. But the workers are already gone. The question is, can we transition forest in such a way that we actually increase the workforce?
Well, okay. I want you to hold that thought in terms of increasing the workforce and translating this proposal for carbon storage and older, keeping trees around longer, keeping them older. But you mentioned in our discussion previous to the show about ownership, and the timber industry problem relates to ownership, new ways of holding companies, real estate investment trust. Why don't you just discuss it? By the way, callers, please feel free to call in 503-325-0010. That's 325-0010. Our guest is Chuck Willer, and he's from the Coast Range Association. Yes. So please call if you have comments or questions. If you disagree with what he's saying, we certainly invite your respectful and informed comments. So go ahead. Pick up on that.
The short of it is 80 to 90% of the most productive forest lands in Western Oregon are owned by large corporate firms. They've been consolidating. And then in the last 15 to 10 years, and 5 years, they've transitioned from just being an ordinary corporation to a real estate investment trust or a timber investment management organization, which is a tax status. And they no longer pay income tax. Their investors pay the tax. They are not paying property tax anymore. And we've documented all this. This was the work I was working on when I started paying closer attention to the climate crisis. So I was looking at the lack of support for local communities by the timber industry. And I said, holy cow, the climate crisis. And now the story is much deeper and interesting.
Yeah, I want to touch on that. Well, let's take a call right now. But I'm interested in that transition, because if it deprives the tax revenues of the state, that's certainly of interest. This is a conversation with John Orr. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Hey, well, I would just like to say that if there's any way we could get the owners to just hire the people to cut the trees, additional lumber, and sell the value in the lumber, instead of treating us like a colony of China. I mean, I sit and watch heading to docks. They go on the boat.
You're breaking up a little bit. I think what you're saying is that you're unhappy.
They're pillaged. Thank you.
Thank you. It's unfortunate. The quality of the reception there, but I think I got what he was saying is that the powers that be that manage our forests treat Oregon and our forests like a colony,
and export the logs. I think he was referring to, why don't you let us mill them? They're being exported.
Thank you.
You know, there's a large component that's exported. It goes up and down each year. He's right. We are a colony. We're a colony at many levels, and we're basically a landscape managed by corporate firms on behalf of investors from all over the world.
But isn't that the economic system that we have? This is a system that is run both economically and politically, in my opinion, based on the premise that what's good for the corporations, what's good for the companies is good for the people, and that the corporate raison d'etre is for profit and return to shareholders, not for the well-being of the local economy, not for culture, not for environmental values if they interfere with the bottom line. I mean, isn't that the given?
That's the story that's put out in the media by the powers. That's not the system we have. In Nebraska and South Dakota, these very same investors cannot go buy farmland. It's banned by state law. We could do whatever we want. Corporations are highly constrained if you write the right laws. You could ban these investors. No one mentions that.
Yeah. So you'd say that one response for what we're facing here in a real estate investment trust, we'll call that Wall Street for short, ownership with their, I guess, shorter timelines for return of profit and thus chopping down the trees before they can become net carbon storage units, where that's where we get into the thing. I wanted to talk about how these trees, if you don't let them grow long enough, they're not carbon storage units. They're something else. What is that something else?
Well, they're just fiber. I mean, you're basically growing a short, small tree for fiber. It might be turned into, you know, some glued product. There might be some 2x4s out of it.
Well, what I'm getting at, though, and I got this from that presentation that we had at the college that you referred to before, is that during the life of a tree, because, you know, after it dies and before it gets a certain age, it's not a carbon storage unit. In fact, it's more the other way.
The industry represents that carbon ends up being stored in sinks. They use way higher numbers than I think the science calls for. But that's detail. What's really important is the size of their forest and the megatons of carbon that are not standing there because the forest is so tiny compared to what the forest was when the earth was cooler.
Yeah.
The earth was cooler because forests were larger. The forests are gone. The carbon's in the atmosphere. Now we've got warming atmosphere. And the scientists, when they're talking about 11 years, that's not just to a tipping point. That's to a point of runaway warming. And the coast of Oregon, if we have runaway warming, we're looking at glacier collapse in the West Antarctic that's going to flood Cannon Beach, flood Seaside, raise sea levels 1, 2, maybe even more meters.
But let me stop you there, because that is a truly appalling prospect. I've heard that. I don't know how many of our viewers have, but it seems to me that if that's true, and the destruction and the claims on insurance companies and on FEMA and federal budgets for disaster, all those things have a value. All those things translate to dollars. So just to cut to the chase, are you saying, or are others suggesting, that our forests, if we let them grow longer, can prevent that and thereby indirectly save money and therefore have financial value as standing trees rather than chopped lumber?
The Green New Deal talks about really about hundreds of programs that transform our carbon intense economy to a carbon neutral economy. We live in one of the greatest forested states in the country. If I was in Nevada, I would not be talking about forest. I'm in Oregon. I'm in the Coast Range. These were massive forests. The Green New Deal, a transformation of our economy, if you believe the crisis is serious enough, if you think we're going to have massive impacts down the road and not far away, not too far away. In fact, the impacts are here now. We need to talk about a massive transformation relative to who we are, and we are the forest state. We're the number one lumber producer in the country, more than Washington. The Tongass Forest has more carbon than our forest in the coast here, but it should just stay standing. Mm-hmm. Our forests need to change so that they grow big, and that's our contribution in this transformation.
They grow big, but we log them according to a schedule that is more sensitive to the value of the forest as carbon sinks, because one thing that's impressed me in the commentaries I've read is that it is so substantial, the amount of good in terms of carbon storage that this state and our forests can do, that there aren't many other places to look to in the short term to make a dent. Do you agree with that?
You have to look where massive forests once stood and where they could be regrown. Not where massive forests currently stand, good, keep them standing, or not where you have small forests. Our carbon, our ability to store carbon in Oregon is way beyond the Amazon. We shouldn't be cutting any more Amazon big trees. But if you want to put carbon back, take it out of the atmosphere, put it back in the big trees. And so, that's my argument. Now, let's move on from there.
Yeah.
How do we do it?
Yeah, how do we do it? Green New Deal.
Some owners manage for a longer rotation, a bigger forest. Starker, near Corvallis. Mm-hmm. They don't cut it 40 years. They'll cut it 65 or 70. The Siletz tribe, they cut it 70 or 65. That's a much larger forest. Well, what if we cut it 100? Mm-hmm. Weyerhaeuser's original game plan for their Millicoma tree farm was to have a 100-year rotation. That keeps the forest massive. We have to go back to a forestry that works for carbon, works for the climate crisis, and has a different ownership and management model that I will call community-owned or locally-owned. We have to transition out. All these lands are always for sale. They're bought and sold every decade. We need to start buying out these Wall Street owners, having a different management model, and employing people to do forest restoration, all kinds of environmental restoration, and not always use the automated equipment. Pay, not have the most efficient forest management system.
Well, it looks like we may have a caller here. We've got time for maybe one or two more callers. Just remind everybody this is a conversation with John Orr. And caller, thank you for calling. What's your comment or question?
That, first of all, the Thursday is the 21st of February, not the 23rd. And I live in Jewell, which is surrounded by these forests, and the local people who were loggers are now very sad over the state of the forest they're looking at. When I talk to them, they don't have the old attitude of support our forest companies because they're our employers like they used to. And the other thing about the county taxes from these forest corporations being gone, the pressure on the assessor's office to tax everybody in every way they can to fill up the coffers so that the county can keep moving forward is really great, and that's not good. And the third comment I really want to say is while the forests are growing, the soils are growing. Because right now the soils are so damaged and are emitting so much carbon after being stripped bare that they need to get healthy, and they hold a tremendous amount of carbon as well as the trees. And thank you so much for your work, Chuck Miller. I just think it's wonderful, and thank you for coming. I'll see you tonight.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah, is it the 21st? I'm just sitting here working from memory.
We'll be sure, and if you give us the information, I can get my phone out, but we'll be sure and post that here. It looks like we may have another caller here, and let's deal with that. This conversation with John R., thanks for your call. What's your comment or question?
I have a couple of comments, but let me clarify. It is Thursday, February 21st at Clatsop Community College.
Thursday, February 21st.
In Columbia Hall.
Columbia Hall.
It starts at 7 o'clock.
Thank you.
And my comment is that the other aspects of having old-growth forests that's really important to understand is that actually the soils in those forests sequester more carbon than all the trees. And so these forests have an incredible capacity to store carbon. And with the shortcut cycles that are done nowadays on these commercial forests, they've destroyed the soils. They cut so frequently, and they remove the slash. They burn it in some cases, so it goes into the atmosphere. But it doesn't go into the soil and build that soil up. And the machinery strips the soils, and the lack of tree cover allows some of the soil to erode and go into the streams and be carried away. And so everything they're doing with these shortcut cycles is destroying the soil layer, which is the real reservoir for carbon. And finally, the cutting cycles that they do, then they follow up with spraying with herbicides. And the only time they spray herbicides is shortly after they've clear cut. So the more frequently they clear cut, the more frequently they're applying herbicides. So our environment is being covered with toxic substances at a much higher frequency than if they'd let the forests grow for 100 or 150 years and then rotate cutting in those old forests. So those are just some things to think about, why old-growth forest is so important and such a benefit to our community and our state. Thanks.
Thanks for your call. I would certainly appreciate it. I think we're just about down to our – that was our last call. But I certainly would appreciate maybe doing another show and maybe get some more diverse viewpoints here, but I have to agree with a lot of what the caller said. And one thing that is not mentioned, there's a study out there called the Jones-Perry study. And the Jones-Perry study says that the way we're logging old growth, again, only 10%, 11% of the state, changes the amount of water storage. It can change microclimate and go from a wet place to a more dry place.
Perry Jones, 50% loss of stream flow between an old-growth forest and a plantation forest. I'd make two quick comments on the two callers. One, the woman talked about taxes. Between 1990 and 2005, when we had the transition to these Wall Street owners, the contribution of taxes from the corporate forest lands to local government dropped 84%. They don't hardly pay any local taxes anymore. It's a free ride.
Yeah, the rest of us have to pick up the slack is kind of what I'm getting
at. And regarding growing trees longer and bigger, not only do they not want to do it, they can't do it because of the nature of being financial investor returns.
Wow. Well, I think we have to wrap it up there. Thanks, Chuck Wilner. You'll be speaking tonight at Tolvon Hall at 7 p.m. And we're looking forward to that, 7 p.m. And if you have contrary viewpoints, you should come on down and give him an earful because he welcomes it. It seems very knowledgeable, and these are important issues for our economy, for our future. And so we're going to leave it there. Thanks for listening to A Conversation with John Orr. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 with a new topic. And we need to get some weather here. It looks like snow all the way through Sunday, and it's going to get cold. And Saturday night, it's going to get windy. So dress warmly. Appreciate the opportunity to do this show. And this is KMUN 91.9. 89.5 FM on KTCB, streaming live at coastradio.org. You can hear this broadcast without being able to call in on coastradio.org. Listen to the podcast.